Welcome to another episode of Return to Camp Blood. I'm your host, Chris, joined by my fellow campers, E.
What's going on, y'all?
And Eric.
What's happening, everybody?
All right, so a couple of announcements before we start. I feel like Allie's probably not going to be joining us anymore. I think she liked the idea of doing a podcast way more than she actually liked sitting in front of the mic. So
tell her I am so disappointed. I know that's not going to mean a lot because she has no clue who I am, but tell her I am really disappointed.
Hey man, she met you once when she was like 4.
That hasn't been that long ago, I guess.
Okay. So tonight we're talking about Friday the 13th Part 2. It was released in 1981, almost a year after Part 1. Now what's interesting about this film is that it wasn't even supposed to be a direct sequel to Part 1. They were actually going to use the series as a way to sort of explore other Friday the 13th superstitions, but I guess fans really wanted to know more about the boy who jumped out of the lake at the end, and the writers listened. I will say that this movie doesn't get put in rotation for me probably ever. Before I watched it this past week, I would have told anyone to skip it because all the relevant parts are relayed as exposition at the start of Part 3. However, after recently rewatching it, I have to say that my mind's changed.
It is a damn good movie, dude.
Yes, it is. And the first thing that I want to talk about is that opening scene. The way that Steve Miner built the tension in the scenes with Alice, I thought was genius.
Yes. Yes, absolutely, man. And even before you see Alice for the first time, I that kid with the itsy bitsy spider thing creeped me out too. But you know,
that's exactly what I was going to say.
I thought that shit. Sorry, Eric. I'm sorry. That shit was weird, man. I didn't mean to steal your thunder, man.
No thunder here.
That shit was like super creepy, and then you know you see Jason, and then you hear the, you know what I mean? It's just, oh man. It was perfect. Like you said, Steve Miner did a phenomenal job opening that up.
Well, yeah, because before every cut, you expect her to die. You know, when she's the shower scene, you expect Jason to come in.
Yep, not a boob in sight either.
When the cat comes through the window, you expect her to die. And there's all this building of tension that is, it had me on the edge of my seat, to be honest with you.
Yep. You're welcome, Paranormal Activity.
And after knowing that Adrian King had specifically asked for her role to be very minimal due to her stalker, I'm sure doing that scene in particular where she was being stalked every which way she turned, I mean, I don't think she had to act very much to be scared. And I think that plays well on the screen.
That scene also proves the age-old adage, cats are dicks.
Yes, they are. But yeah, you're right. She went out of acting for a long time because of that stalker.
That's crazy, man.
And she owns like a winery or something like that now, and is pretty much a recluse due to the stalking.
Well, recently started going to conventions and you know, playing small roles in other movies. I've been seeing on, you know, my Facebook feed pictures of her at some of the conventions pop up finally, and it's cool. I mean, it I'm glad to see that she's finally able to, you know, meet the fans that have loved her in the movies
for 30 years plus.
Something else about that opening scene too, you know, I think we mentioned it in a previous episode about, we may have mentioned it, I'm not certain, but about Jason, like some of the different actors, some of them will play him and he'll have like human-like qualities, and then other ones will play him and then it's like completely inhuman. I thought in the opening scene on this one, after he stabs Alice on the side of the head with the ice pick or whatever it was, I think it was an ice pick, it looked like it, he was considerate enough to move the teapot off of the stove. I thought that was really nice of him.
Yes, it was.
That was a good thing he did. You don't want to leave that there because it's gonna damage the pot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but leave the stove on because it's gonna catch fire and burn down. Who cares about that? But that noise, damn it.
Well, yeah, you know, even, you know, being a supernatural serial killer, you still gotta, you know, burn the house down and hide the evidence, I guess. I don't know.
And so, did you guys notice that the head in the refrigerator was not the same head that you find, that Jenny finds in the shrine later on? They're like completely different.
You're referring to the, which head? Wait, you're talking about Pamela Voorhees' head?
Oh, wait a second.
No.
Wait a second. I just remembered that the beginning scene takes place a couple months after the events of the first movie.
Yeah, so that's going to be one of the victims.
While the rest... Well, no. I still think it's Pamela's head, now that I'm thinking about it. However, the rest of the movie takes place like 5 years after the first movie. So...
Yeah.
Yeah, it could quite possibly be his mom's head.
Yeah, but
you think so? I thought
are completely different. I've rewound and fast forwarded and rewound and fast forwarded, and there is no resemblance of Pamela Voorhees.
I'm pretty sure the head in the refrigerator's got like black hair or something.
Or cauterized blood, or not cauterized, congealed blood.
Well, yeah,
blood.
I guess there's that too. Yeah, that's probably a possibility too. It doesn't look the same.
But its mouth's wide open. And, yeah. I mean, what's he going to do? He took the time to put the sweater and make a shrine. Do you think he's going to break the jaw and shove the lips together or whatnot? I don't know.
Well, the final scene where it actually shows the shrine, her mouth is open. Because I'm sort of looking at pictures of it right now. However, if you look at the picture from the refrigerator, her mouth is open significantly more.
Yeah, gaping.
So maybe, yeah, and it looks like the hair is darker. So maybe it's not his mom, actually, now that I'm looking at both these pictures side by side.
But that seems to be the common belief that that's who it is supposed to be.
That's the consensus that I've seen as well. So here's something else I want to talk about. Let's talk about Jenny. And she is probably my favorite final girl. And I like the way that she was introduced for two reasons. The first reason, and this is kind of silly, but I thought it was important to point out. As soon as you see her driving up in her car, it gets established right off the bat that her car is a piece of shit, and which explains pretty well why her car doesn't start while she's trying to get away from Jason later on. Now, I bring that up to say that, you know, a lot of the movies that feature a car that won't start, it seems like they don't establish initially that this car is a piece of shit. Whereas Jenny's car, you know, Paul's even giving her shit about it being, you know, not starting and stuff.
I don't want to jump the subject real quick, but I would like to point out that I am looking directly at the scene from part two with the head in the refrigerator, and that is without a doubt his mom's head. So, but I do agree. What's that?
Are you looking at the picture of the shrine too? The shrine head?
No. The hair is white. I'm looking at the scene in the movie, and it's definitely his mom's head. She's even got a similar expression to right before Alice lopped her head off.
That's true.
But yeah, I do like your point about how they established that her car was a piece of shit beforehand. Because I mean, like for instance, I'll use one of my favorite horror movies, Evil Dead, as an example. I'm referring to the new one. I won't use that one. Disregard. I won't even use an example. Most of the time, yeah, like you said, like they'll show up in a car that worked just fine before they got there, and everything goes to shit for some unknown reason. And this one, they actually pointed out, like, as soon as she pulled up to the camp, her car was just crapping out on her. You could hear it. Just, it was awful.
And is that actually negative propaganda against Volkswagen? Because, I mean, the Volkswagen was used in part two and part three.
Volkswagen is negative propaganda against Volkswagen.
Well, I mean the Volkswagen Beetle was an invention of Hitler, so
there you go. There you go. Beetles are evil.
And so, okay, here's the second reason why I like the way that Jenny was introduced. Paul points out specifically that she studied child psychology in college, which I think explains her actions in the meeting in Jason's shack, because she had the presence of mind.
No, I was just saying, I was going to say, you know what? That is a fucking good point. I did not even think about that.
Yeah, I mean, well, even in the bar scene, she's trying to empathize with Jason. And
she's pondering it.
Yeah, which I think really explained why she acted the way she did on the final, that confrontation with Jason and his shack.
Very true.
Because, I mean, most people in that situation, your first thought is not going to be, hey, let me put on this dead woman's fucking sweater and try to act like his mother.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that's a really good point, man. I did not even think about that as I was watching it. I mean, it's for her to like really dig into that and try to think about why and then utilize that to save her ass at the end. That was really good.
And I mean, and then you see the reaction of Jason's eye whenever she's bringing the machete up. She's like, you've done your job well and mommy is pleased. And I mean, she's speaking to him as if he's a mentally challenged child. And it's not until he's ready to let her lop his head off just because mommy says so. And until he actually sees the head and the shrine, then he's like, oh shit, now you're getting pickaxed to the leg.
Yep. And that was kind of gross, that whole pickaxe thing. That was pretty gross.
That was pretty graphic.
Yeah, but you know what was missing? You know what was missing from this whole movie in terms of the kills? Was Tom Savini, dude.
Yes, the makeup director from, what, part one and four?
Yeah, I think that's right.
I agree to some extent, but, I mean, like the scene with Jeff and
Sandra.
And Sandra, thank you.
Yeah, yep.
Marta Kober. When she gets double penetrated, I don't know if that's that. I'm not meaning what that actually sounds like.
Yeah, that's a much more horrible DP than you're gonna find anywhere on the internet.
Yeah, and for our listeners who may not be aware, that's the scene where Jeff and Sandra are going at it, and they get impaled with a spear, which seems to be a staple in Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, he seems to have something against that. You might as well get him in the act, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely. And the thud that the spear makes as it hits the ground. I mean, it just, it's like, thud. And when Vicky comes back in, after Mark, gets, and that has to be one of the best death scenes ever. I mean,
oh yeah, where Mark gets hit in the face with the machete and falls down the stairs backwards.
Yes,
and it freezes before it switches scenes.
Yeah, I mean that was total. I mean that made the cut of the original ad. I mean, his wheelchair going down backwards. I mean, what else are you going to do with a wheelchair? And how the hell did he get in there? Because it's not there. If you look, there's no wheelchair accessible ways to get in there. One.
Well, and he probably just turned it around backwards and rolled it up, man. I mean, you seen him smashing people in arm wrestling the whole movie. I mean, he was dude was swole, you know. So probably just rolled it up backwards up the steps, man.
I'm picturing Joe from Family yeah. Guy.
I don't need your help.
I don't need your help.
that's where they got the character from. I'm convinced now.
I've got to say that the saddest kill has to be Mr. Walt Gorney.
Oh man, that hurt my heart when Crazy Ralph took an L.
You shouldn't be perving being a voyeur.
Let that be a lesson, Peeping Toms.
Yes, do not Peeping Tom. I mean, if horror movies are supposed to, you know, demean people smoking pot or doing drugs or having sex, that is a definite underrated thing. That scene right there should be, don't be a Peeping Tom. Otherwise, you know, you're going to get a leather strap around your neck.
Yeah, that was barbed wire, sir.
Yeah, that was barbed wire. I think that was probably one of the worst deaths in that movie.
Not just because it was Crazy Ralph. That in and of itself makes it horrible that somebody would be such a horrible, even horror movie monster to kill somebody as great as Crazy Ralph. But just the way it happened was, man.
Yeah.
And he knew better.
Yeah.
I mean,
he knew it had a death curse.
Death curse, for God's sakes.
What's that you say?
Good to camp blood, ain't you? We'll never come back again. It's got a death curse.
Yes. Do it.
That's going in every single time you bring up Crazy
Why
Ralph.
Why are you hanging out there after dark?
Well, I mean, if you guys remember, though, the setting for this movie was not actually Camp Crystal Lake. It was a counselor training center some ways away from the actual camp.
What was it? It began with a P. It began with a P. I can't remember the name of it. But yeah, yeah, it was a little bit off from actual Camp Crystal Lake, because you remember Cassandra and Jeff went off to try to go find Crystal Lake, and then that's what they found. What we thought was Muffin disemboweled in the middle of the woods.
walks up to Jason's boot and looks up, and it's like, oh, never mind. Okay, perfect cut to a hot dog on the grill.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, you know, now that you mention that, early on in the movie, you know, the dog walks up to Jason's boot and everything, and that's typically what you see early on in the movie. The first time you see a full body Jason is right before the cop chases him into the woods when he runs across the street. Before that point, and actually a good bit after it in the movie, you just see like from the waist down. And interesting thing here, this particular movie is the only time that you see Jason Voorhees stalking through the woods, and it's actually played by a woman for a moment. It's played by the costume designer Ellen Lutter, just briefly, because I guess, you know, they needed somebody to just shoot the scene, and it's not gonna make much of a difference if it's just showing the legs. So, you know, that little bit of gee whiz trivia for all you campers out there.
So it was actually 14 Jasons that played Jason Voorhees, because Steve Daskowitz played the masked Jason, whereas Warrington Gillette was the dude that came through the window, the unmasked Jason.
Yeah, and there's always been controversy as to who should get credit in this movie for playing Jason because of that.
I should. That's not right. That's not accurate at all. I apologize, everybody.
You're not tall enough to play Jason. You know, unless the campers were midgets.
You know what? There's a scene where he walks up to, I think it's Vicky, and it might not be Vicky. I don't think they really show them together in the same shot.
They do the butcher knife when she goes in and finds Mark and Sandra, the room where Mark and Sandra should be, and the sheets are all bloody. And
oh, okay.
Jason pops out, and then you see Jason with the butcher knife and the bruised thumb.
Well, that said, they're like almost like eye to eye, and the height difference is not much more. So I'm telling you, there could come a time where all you beloved campers may see me playing Jason Voorhees. I'm already bald, so, you know, it could work out.
All right, so there's a lot of debate, actually, as to the end of the film. There's one camp that thinks that most of the sequence, especially the point at which Jason breaks through the window and grabs Jenny, is a dream, whereas the other side, which is my camp, I maintain and that all that happened in real time. Like, it wasn't a dream. It actually, that's actually what happened.
But
yeah,
if that's the case, I mean, how do you suppose, I mean, are they just kind of leaving it up to the imagination as to how she got away or what, you know?
Okay,
I mean,
here's my theory. After Jason grabbed Jenny through the window, I feel like Paul could have probably beaten Jason back enough to keep him away from Jenny, while okay. also sustaining fatal wounds. Because, here's my evidence for this. If you listen to the news report at the start of part three, it states that 8 bodies were recovered. Now, because of the time frame with Alice's death, she doesn't count in all of that. She was killed years before the events of part two. And so if you go based on that news report that 8 bodies were recovered, Paul would have been the last one.
You're right, because outside of Alice, there's 7 deaths in the movie.
Which is funny considering...
You're absolutely right.
Which is funny considering that one scene where they're all eating dinner and you see like tons of fucking people there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But everybody bailed out. Everybody knew what the fucking deal was. They weren't hanging around for that bullshit.
Well, I mean, they were at the bar, and you see Stu Charno playing Ted ask the barmaid if there's any after-hours places.
He punched out, too. The ginger kid, he punched out.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he did.
So, and I feel like in this movie, Jason was the most human out of all of the other ones. Especially, you can see this especially in his last fight with Jenny. When she is saying, you know, oh, there's somebody else in this room with us, Paul. And, like, you can see Jason, like, cowering and scrambling to get away from her when she's trying to hit him.
That's a good point. He actually displayed a lot of human qualities, which kind of lends to the idea that our listener from last week with the question, it was the caller that called in, it was Phil.
Yeah, Phil from Staten Island.
Yeah, it was Phil, right? He had the idea that maybe Jason didn't drown, and that kind of lends to that idea in a way, because he still has some human-like qualities at that point. Plus, you know, when he jumps through the window, he's got, like, the beard. He looks like he's just been out there in the woods forever. You know, I don't know. And it kind of lends to that idea, you know what I mean? And also, there was also a scene I noticed, too, with more of the human-like qualities. When Jenny runs up the hill, she's leaving the cabin and everything, and she hides in that, I guess she thinks she's hiding in that bush, you can see right through the damn thing. But, like, Jason runs up the hill, and she turns around and kicks him in the nuts.
Yeah, I remember that. And that shit was great.
He went down like a fucking sack of potatoes, man.
As any normal human man would.
I would have done the same fucking thing. I was like, go, oh shit, you know what? Go get in the car, get in your shitty little Beetle, and get the fuck out of here.
And that was awesome when she did try to get in the Beetle, and all you see is the pitchfork go down through. I mean, that was an awesome scene. I think out of every Friday, this is probably my favorite final chase scene.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It was really good. It was really good.
Although I can bet that as we go through these movies and get our memories refreshed on a lot of them, like, saying a scene is our favorite is going to come up a lot.
Yeah, it's going to happen repeatedly. It's going to be – people are going to go back and listen to them and be like, yo, I thought you said this was your favorite scene. This motherfucker be lying, yo.
But as a longtime watcher and lover of this franchise – I've always maintained that, I mean, from the score to the them running through the woods, her double backing, her crawling underneath the bed. You know, she's got a psycho killer after her, and a mouse is going to make her piss her pants. Really?
You know, since you mentioned that scene, I did not notice until I watched it, you know, prepping for the show, that she pissed her pants. I understand. I understand entirely.
I wonder if that was real.
I had no idea. It, you know what? I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe they didn't tell her how it was going. Like they do with a lot of movies. They don't let the cast members know certain things that are going to happen. Maybe she pissed her pants. Shit.
That's something that Kane Hodder would do. He would not show himself on set before they were shooting while he was dressed up.
And that's why he's the best Jason, Eric.
Some would say that he was very hard on the actors and that he stayed completely in character through the entire filming.
He knew how it was done.
And to mention, both Steve Daskowitz, the masked Jason, and Warrington Gillette are both 6'1", and they are the shortest actors to have ever played the character.
Okay, so I guess the height difference might be an issue then.
No, do you know why that is?
Why is that?
Because over time, the other actors they've got to play the campers have all grown in height as well.
You know, that happens in life.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, let's transition into some listener mail. So when I posted that we were recording the show tonight, one of our Facebook fans, Scotty, he wanted to know, this is a direct quote, "Why the bag with one eye hole?" And since Eric, you are a resident mask expert, I figured that you would be best qualified to answer this one.
What I found is Steve Miner, still playing on the horror slasher genre that John Carpenter created with Halloween. And, you know, since both are towns in New Jersey, he wanted a blank slate like The Shape, which was the casting name for Michael Myers. And he actually stole the idea from the town that dreaded sundown. And other than that, we see in the comics that Jason was being ridiculed for being deformed by kids while the counselors were making love, and that's subsequently how he ended up drowning. So, I mean, putting a bag covering up and your abnormalities would, I mean, it's kind of a commonplace, especially if you think like a child.
Yeah, absolutely. And contrary to popular belief, that was not a burlap sack that he wore. It was actually a pillowcase.
And why not, you know? I mean, burlap sacks seem like they would retain so much heat. You don't want to be running around through the woods with a burlap sack on your head. You're just going to get all sweaty.
It would be itchy as fuck.
Yeah, no kidding, right? He's going to have to stop. He's going to be like trying to chase people and like scratching his face and running into trees and shit. I mean, it's not conducive to his, you know, his objective, you know?
Not at all. Oh, that noise is actually Jason.
Maybe that's what the...
That noise is actually Jason itching his face.
Yep. That's what it is. He's scratching his head and shit.
That's funny.
All right. On a different note, Frank from, and I'm not saying last names anymore, just so you know, but I'll probably tag these people in the post that I make for the when we release the show. Frank from Friday the 13th. The film franchise Facebook group wanted to know, what is the real reason why the actor that played Paul have for not being there at the very end when he seemingly survived? I read several times that the actor stormed off the set at the time for reasons known only to that actor. Was there a salary dispute or something? I read a while back that actually there was no problem with Paul. He was released from the set because they were done filming his parts, and that the ending was pretty much what they intended. All right, so guys, are there any final thoughts before we sign off?
I kind of want to point something out, and to the importance of this movie in the at the 82nd Oscar Awards. They did like a tribute to horror movies and stuff, which is, it's really rare that the Oscars even, I don't even know, they don't even want to be in the same room as horror movies, because I don't know, they don't appreciate quality filming, I guess, I don't know. But they did a tribute to horror movies during the 82nd Academy Awards. And the final scene where Jason crashes through the window and he snatches Jenny out, that scene, and the whole thing with him picking the knife up right before he killed Vicky, you know how it shows the knife and everything, and it's kind of like blurred out and all that on Vicky, and you just see the knife. Those two scenes were featured in that horror montage. So that right there shows you that this movie, it has iconic moments. This one is not typically one that people will bring up when they talk about, like, you know, their favorite moments from Friday the 13th, from the Friday the 13th series and everything. But it has two of the iconic moments that were actually featured in a horror montage during the Oscars. So, you know, I mean, that kind of shows you the importance of this movie as far as the horror genre, you know.
And I also wanted to mention that the campfire scene that we haven't talked about, this sets Jason as the antagonist for the entire series.
That's true.
And I mean, it's been used in, I know, at least a couple other of the Friday movies. And I mean, that set the standard for what Jason is. Paul did a great job in the 2 minutes and 58 seconds that it took up of airtime.
All right. Please consider supporting the show by liking the Facebook page and giving us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can also purchase the Friday the 13th movie we're talking about tonight using our Amazon affiliate link at campbloodpodcast.com/part2. If you want to ask us a question or vindicate a theory you might have, you can contact the show by sending us an email at campbloodpodcast@outlook.com or by using #campbloodpodcast on Twitter. Until next time.
You're going to Camp Blood, ain't you? You'll never come back again. It's got a death curse.